The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, the company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention OMAHA for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PetsLife.com. All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. Lots of big stuff going on. I'm joined here by Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha. You can find him on Twitter at tschreier3. Tom, how's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Not too bad. What's new with Cold Omaha right now?
We got a lot of football stuff up, although we've done some baseball coverage here, covering kind of the GM search, and I talked about Molitor and how candid he is about how the team's going. But yeah, a lot of in-depth football, trying to break down whether or not the Vikings can beat the Packers in the big season opener.
Well, I think if they don't score an offensive touchdown,
oh, that's trouble.
As they did in week one, that's obviously going to be very difficult. A very difficult task to do. But anyway, we did have I wrote a huge breakdown of the Twins game where they beat Danny Duffy. They didn't. I don't believe he took the loss. But they got to Kelvin Herrera with a home run from Byron Buxton. I know Robbie Grossman hit a home run. I wrote a big takedown article. Not takedown in the fact that I was taking anybody down, but piece by piece breaking it down. I guess breakdown maybe is a better way to put it. But a big article on that. That's still up on the site. I did have a little bit of news yesterday on the Jason McLeod thing that broke. We're going to have that broken down here in just a minute or two. But yeah, so we've been working on a lot of fun stuff a lot of fun stuff to come. I think I'm going to try break down Jose Berríos here in the next couple days because I want to see if I can figure out how he's tipping his changeup. If everybody else seems to see it, I'm going to see if I can find it too. But without any further ado, let's bring in our guest from suburban Detroit at this moment right now. It's the St. Paul Pioneer Press's Mike Berardino. Mike, how are we doing?
Hey, I have to correct you. I'm in downtown Detroit.
Oh, wow.
Much better rate than the Cleveland downtown. So I am at the Renaissance Center Marriott, and it's a nice 15-minute walk from the ballpark.
I was about to ask. That's not too bad. And so safe area, you're in a good spot to walk after the game and everything. That's not too bad?
I don't want to jinx myself, but I feel just fine.
Well, good. Coming off an interesting game, I want to say, last night, a 4-2 loss, but I think Irvin Santana kept him in the game. A little strange that he only lasted 5 innings. Came out after the game, I think, that he was just done. But kind of a wild day overall for the Twins. You know, not so much focusing on the game, but other things out externally that came out as well. First of all, let's break down the game a little bit, Mike. You know, what did you see? The fact of the matter is they held the Tigers to 4 runs. That's got to be in the positive column, so to speak. But what did you see going on yesterday Comerica Park?
Well, I must admit that I wasn't watching as intently as I normally would because I was writing up a long feature, basically newsy feature on the search and Jason McLeod with that coming out. That's not a surprise name at all that the Twins would be interested. Anybody in baseball who was looking for that to fill that job would like Jason McLeod or others involved with the Cubs, but he should have been a GM by now, by all rights. He's turned down opportunities to go back to his hometown Padres, where there are some, personal life issues that might have kept him away. And then Seattle was interested, and he turned that down. So there was a general sense that he was happy doing what he's doing. There still is that sense. So the news, the real coup will be not that the Twins could get him to interview, but if they can get him to take the job, and I'm not even saying he's obvious, he's definitely the lead horse right now, but he certainly would be on near the top of anyone's list. But so that was what I was doing during the game, because that Jed Hoyer started to talk about him and to reporters in general at Wrigley Field, I guess, right around the time the Twins game was starting. As far as the game itself, I did see Brian Dozier hit a home run, and he's now hit 40 of those. I saw Kurt Suzuki hit another at-bat home run. It had been a while, and he's been kind of quiet after the two-month resurgence. And he was batting fifth, by the way. So you get to see some interesting lineups here down the stretch when you're Barry Molitor's trying to put forth a credible team every night and balance the need to look at people in different roles and spots versus the sanctity of the pennant race. And the Tigers are firmly in a pennant race.
All right, Mike, we're going to call timeout here. It's weird. It's giving you kind of a spacey sound, and I'm not sure what it is. Anyway, back at it. You mentioned seeing players maybe in roles that were something that they hadn't been in or been thrust into all season long. The one place that I've noticed that, and it's probably almost born from necessity, has been the bullpen. Paul Molitor brought in JT Chagua, who pitched a very nice sixth inning with a strikeout, perfect inning, basically speaking. No swinging strikes, which, again, I've been kind of keeping an eye on, but only 9 pitches, did a nice job with 6 strikes. And, you know, it's a situation where that was preserving a one-run lead at that time, I believe, or it was a one-run game anyway. But he's been going to JT Chagua, Alex Wimmers, guys who you would not expect to be pitching in close games much more frequently recently. What have you thought about that? I mean, it's kind of a deal where it's just got to see what these guys do, get their mettle tested, got to back away from Ryan Pressly. Obviously, Michael Tonkin had the layoff as well. Is it just a deal where, you know, Molitor's trying to see what these guys can do, or what all is at play here, in your opinion?
Yeah, and I'd like to even see him extend it, and you may actually see this, where someone besides Brandon Kinsler, if the Twins could actually take a lead into the ninth inning, might get a save opportunity or two, because maybe Chagua could get one, maybe mm-hmm. Pressly could get one, although, like you say, Pressly right there at the top of the appearance stack for American League relievers, that they don't. There's really no point to running him into the ground. It's going to be case by case. It's going to be night by night. And I'm not as curious about Alex Wimmers as Molitor seems to be, considering the long path and his age. And I know his former first rounder, but to his credit, he's overall. He's attacked the zone, and Molitor said he's not afraid. Whereas, you know, that there's this insinuation that some of his other relievers have been poking around the edges too much. And I think of Pat Light there. Pat Light, they've got a number of answers on him, not too many in the affirmative. Chagua, though, you're right, he's looked better lately, and I'd like to see him pitching closer to the end of the game in leverage situations, because he is part of the future here, I believe.
If you were to handicap the closer situation moving forward, who do you think opens 2017 pitching the ninth inning for the Twins?
Too many variables because of the search, right? I mean,
sure.
There's always the ability to bring in bounce back pieces. There's going to be the sense of the Twins are pleased that they found Brandon Kinsler on the scrap heap, but he's going to get a nice bump in arbitration, because
yes,
saves lead to raises. And the modest number of saves that he had is kind of similar to Jepson's number last year. Well, Jepson, as a fifth-year arbitration guy, he was coming off a salary, I believe, right around $3 million. Well, he bumped it up there to $5 and change. So I think Kinsler's going to go from about $1 million bargain basement piece to I'm trying to get wrap my hands around it, but I think it could triple or more.
It
so
could.
You know, if it just depends. I would say right now the leader to be the opening day closer next year has to be Kinsler, just because Perkins. There's so many unanswered questions. I'm sure they'll ease him back into the role even if he's ready opening day. I don't think they're just going to say go get him. That's a major surgery. And then no one else has been auditioned yet. That surprised me a little. I thought, you know, you can keep Brandon Kinsler's cost down a little bit if you stop letting him get saves.
Right.
And there's no reason to let him keep increasing his 2017 salary. You've got your answers on him. You know, you know what you don't. There's no the only variable with him at this point is health, and you're not going to help his health by putting him out there anymore. So you know, it's all a sliding scale. But I'm always a little surprised at this point whenever Kinsler in September here now mid September. Goes out there and pads his numbers.
Yeah, and he had worked a lot of eighth innings, too. I think up until this last weekend, he'd thrown a pitch in the eighth inning in five of six appearances, the fifth one being the culmination where he gave up all those runs in that loss to the Royals, and then the Twins went to, the night Duffy pitched, the Twins went to Presley in the eighth inning. I think it made more sense there with Terrence Gore at second, needing a strikeout, or more likely a strikeout. With Kinsler, you're going to get a grounder. If you hit a grounder with Terrence Gore on second, he's scoring almost certainly. So that made sense to me to make a move there too. But it's been interesting to watch how Molitor's evolution or usage has evolved with Kinsler. And I think Kinsler too, not a bargain at $3 million working in the middle innings next year, but he is the kind of guy you can bring into jams to get you that get-out-of-the-inning double play. And I think maybe that would be more beneficial to use him that way. Now, with that said, you haven't auditioned anyone as closer, and he's done a good enough job that it doesn't look good for you to take him out of that role, you know, based on how you want to treat veterans and how you want to treat guys that have done everything you've asked them to do. But if you can get him to work middle innings next year and maybe have a better option to close games out too, I think that's a good thing. But I don't think they'll go outside the organization either in their search for the next closer. Would you agree?
I haven't looked at the trade or free agent market at all for that yet. You might have. And again, we don't know who's going to be in place. We don't know what the target payroll will be. And we won't know. We'll have a better sense a little closer to the winter what Kinsler's projected arbitration number would be. Maybe they want to sign him at this stage of his career. If you want to knock down that 2017 number, you offer him 2 years. They've done this multiple times with people. Under Terry Ryan, we'll see if the new regime wants to or if Rob Antony wants to, but I could see a two-year $6 million deal or two-year $5 million even. I mean, this guy has never really made much. This is about his maximum salary, million and change. So, and he's happy here. He likes it here. He didn't want to be traded. He was willing to go into a pennant race. He's had a little taste of it at the Brewers 1 year, but He's very comfortable with the Twins, as he should be, and he's known Eddie Guardado since he was a kid, and it's just a good fit for him. So I would think a multi-year would be something they would discuss. The tricky part there is that it's been so hard to keep that guy healthy.
Now, you had mentioned Dozier hit his 40th home run of the season last night. A bit of a fence scraper, but they all count the same. I'm not sure how many more superlatives we can lump on this season. I believe there's now been 8 40 home run seasons in franchise history, or at least in the Minnesota side of the franchise. 7 by Harmon Killebrew, who is Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame human being as well. And both those things apply to Dozier now as well with 40 home runs. Did you expect 40 to come? And was it kind of anticlimactic to be a fence scraper, to be on the road and in a losing effort? Or is it just kind of, you know, lost its effect with him doing this while the team has been struggling so badly?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think we definitely should appreciate it. Dozier finally played the card of I'll wait to the end of the season to put it in perspective, to assess it. That's the way to do it. It's been difficult every time he's homered in a loss, and it's been the majority of them. It's been crazy, especially in the second half. I can only imagine what that is like. Generally, you know, you hear numbers over years of guys who are productive sluggers. Teams generally play 600 ball or better when they homer. That's just a number I pulled out of the air. But I bet it's the case for typically the best player on a team. When the best player on a team homers, Miguel Cabrera, whoever, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, I'll bet you teams play, it just feels intuitively like they play 600 balls. So for the Twins to be well below 500 in the second half, almost guaranteed of a loss since early August when Brian Dozier homers, it's just screwy. And, did I expect 40 to come? Yes, I didn't think he would. Once he got to 39, I didn't think he would be stuck there forever. But he did wait 6 days between homers, and so that's why Irvin Santana said, "What took you so long?" And And we were monitoring the Dozier drought on Twitter. But the drought is over, and he's got a couple weeks left here to almost 3 weeks to pad him and get the 45. And they just keep throwing him fastballs. Francisco Rodriguez didn't throw him any fastballs in the ninth inning, all splits, but he took his walk. But when you challenge him with an inside fastball, as we've talked, he can still destroy it, and he's got 40. And he had a good line after the game where he said, you know, what sucks is now they're going to expect me to do this every year. And I think he knows, you know, he just knows this was a very unique set of circumstances and an amazing period where he just was on fire and events conspired to work. I think the lack of pressure in the standings may have helped too. And so, you know, who knows how many times, I'd have to look how many times the home runs were trailing by X number of runs. I'm not saying they're meaningless. 40 is never meaningless, but none of them have aided the Twins' cause in a team context.
So last night you had reported that Miguel Sano had left the game with a back issue. I believe he was replaced by Jorge Polanco in the lineup and shuffled the defense a little bit. What's the latest on that?
Well, yeah, Sano, as they announced during the game, and he told us afterwards that the tightness in his right lower back, and it's something that I asked him how long you've been feeling it, and he said about 3 days earlier, getting out of bed back during the homestand, so it wasn't a foreign mattress or anything, but he felt a little pain at that point, getting out of bed. He played through the weekend with it, didn't bark at him terribly, but he could feel it from time to time, and then the pain increased to the point where he really felt it on a swing in the first inning last night on a ball off the center field, and he felt it again charging a J.D. Martinez roller, making that really nice off-balance throw that Sano makes almost at will. So he came out of the game after a couple more strikeouts, and he said he thought a couple days and he'd be fine, but of course the Twins aren't going to rush him back in there. There's no point to that, and this just fits snugly in what has been a very frustrating and unsatisfying year overall for Miguel, going back to the position change and the month with the hamstring and then the elbow scare in August, and overall strikeouts soaring and home runs kind of just plateauing. And no doubt 2016 was not his favorite year. If there's any Twin who's really eager to flip the calendar and move on, it's Miguel Sano.
And so another player who's been battling injuries lately and been sitting out is Joe Mauer. I saw that it sounds like he's probably going to sit a little bit more down the stretch, gets a little better look at Kenny Vargas for Paul Molitor and company too. But, you know, what's the latest on Joe, and what are you expecting to see from him the rest of the way?
I think we're going to see sporadic Joe the rest of the way, and that's because the sore quads, generally plural, but you got a little intrigue where Joe is saying that it's more the right quad that's really bothering him, and Molitor thought it was the left quad, which would make sense because Joe had told us in Cleveland 5 weeks ago or so that it really barks at him when he gets on that back leg to hit, when he tries to stay back and load properly. But no, it's, you know, really it's both of them, and then he's going to end up sitting out three straight games for sure, and maybe comes back Wednesday, maybe not, and then the day game on Thursday, so you could see a situation where he might not play again until the weekend. Well, the weekend's at New York and no DH, right. And, you know, do you want him in the field for nine innings dealing with sore legs? So it's possible they'll just give him the whole week off. I wouldn't rule that out if he doesn't respond to treatment and there's any concern at all that he'd be, just not at close to his best. No one's 100%, of course. But, you know, he's struggled now. Played overall for a good span of time, really since leaving Cleveland in early August when the Twins, but even in the headlines in the Plain Dealer, were the 27 Yankees. But his numbers over 100 plate appearances or so are pretty minuscule, and a lot of that they believe has to do with his legs. You hit with your legs, of course, and he has, to his credit, he continues to want to be out there. He's been out there a good bit And he had laid out for a ball that saved two runs the other day, and then he chased a ball down the pop-up down the line during the homestand that he didn't get against the White Sox, but it did cause him to wince noticeably. And then there's repercussions, as Mahler says. Anytime he has to go above and beyond and test those legs, there's going to be some repercussions the next day. And you're now at the stage of the schedule where there's really a limited point to this, to putting him out there. I don't think they'll shut him down totally. I think they're going to use him sporadically.
And before we close with Jason McLeod talk, I do have one question about Alex Anthopoulos. Did come out that he had kind of spurned the Twins' advances. I don't suspect that you're too surprised by this, but what was your takeaway from that situation?
I wouldn't take it as a rejection of the Twins, and you know, it's an open question that you know, just how high on the Twins list, or whether he was at the top of the Twins list or not. We don't really know that. I think he's on the Twins list, but Alex, I think it was, as I wrote with multiple sources, it was a matter of timing more so. For him, he's just moved his young family out to L.A. Would he take a GM job, the perfect situation, right away, right now? Yeah, I think he would. Will he be a GM again within the next year or 18 months? I think so. But I think any opportunity that came at him right now was going to have to be perfect, because he's a native Canadian. He's been in Toronto for a decade plus with his family and little kids, ages 4 and 5. And I don't think he was ready, from what I was told and what he's told associates, to yank them out of school. And although Minnesota school is a lot better than Southern California schools, but he didn't even get that far. It's too bad. I think he's the most accomplished trader of his generation, of this last decade. Billy Beane's got the movie and all the accolades, but has Billy Beane traded Josh Donaldson to Alex when he shouldn't have? And Alex has pulled off so many trades and just gutsy trades along with his scouts. He really bulked it. What should be pointed out is what he did during his half decade in Toronto was bulk up the scouting staff. He didn't lay scouts off, which had happened under J.P. Ricciardi, his predecessor and his mentor. He actually came in and brought in a bunch of former GMs and newer scouts, and they have probably the largest scouting group in all of baseball, and that's still there now under Shapiro and Atkins. It was Anthopoulos who was pushing for more voices from the scouting community, not less, and I think he'll take that approach to the next place.
So with the news coming out about the interest in McLeod, again, pretty much connecting the dots in a lot of ways because of his pedigree, his perceived prestige within the game, there's a lot of things to really like about him, his eye for talent, and he's drafted names like Dustin Pedroia with his first overall pick that he ever made, Anthony Rizzo, I'm trying to think of anybody else. I mean, basically, any Red
Buckholz.
Sox. Yeah, Buckholz. I believe Jed Lowry, who was a big-time prospect. Any of those Red Sox prospects, and keep in mind, at that time, Red Sox prospects was a buzzword. I mean, that was a situation where that was a hyped bunch of kids, you know, after maybe the Hanley Ramirez era, but they had, you know, a ton of really great prospects, and he was at the forefront of that. He was in the room when, I believe, Chris Bryant was drafted as well. Again, mm-hmm. with a top pick like that, maybe not as tough to nail it, but he really did knock that one out of the park. What's your takeaway from this? Because everybody that I've spoken to within the industry says that would be a slam dunk or I guess a home run hire for the Twins, but there is some skepticism, I think, from fans worrying that he wouldn't want to come because of how bad things have gotten here. My personal opinion is he doesn't get on the plane, or he doesn't accept their advances at even interviewing if he's not at least somewhat intrigued by the concept of coming to Minnesota and righting the ship.
I agree, and you also, you know, he's a West Coast guy who deep San Diego roots and pitched college ball in Southern California and has worked with the Padres two different times. And the Padres job, by the way, could come open again here.
Oh, it absolutely could. Yeah, with Preller on the outs,
yeah.
Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. AJ Preller has been the riverboat gambler, has not paid off very well. He's the anti-Anthopoulos because just about every deal he's made has blown up in his face.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Twins in Arizona is going to blow it up, I think. And would they come after a Jason McLeod if he is, does prove to be the hottest commodity out there that hasn't had a chance to be a GM or lead a baseball operations group yet? When Jed Hoyer says the kind of things about him and Theo Epstein says the kind of things about him that they say after working with him in multiple markets, Jed's worked with him in San Diego as well, they don't. There's nobody holding back on endorsements publicly for this guy. Everybody says he's a great boss, a great leader, obviously an eye for talent and ability to synthesize what his scouts will put together. Now, what's interesting is about, you know, when you've made your bones basically on the amateur side, and very little pro side talk, you know, it's basically Plaherty oversees player development for the Cubs, and obviously they get people to the majors ready to go, it looks like. And then he's got a deep amateur side background, but not a lot of the pro side where some of these other candidates that you hear about, many of them have pro personnel roots or current responsibilities. So, and when you're a general manager, when you're the president of baseball operations, you're the bigger picture guy. Dave St. Peter has said he's looked for that top hire. He's looked for somebody who sees things from 30,000 feet. That person may go in and look at a top five draft pick possibility, or in the Twins case, maybe the number one overall pick.
Right.
But it's, and he's going to make sure that his scouting director and all his cross checkers and special assistants and everybody's on board. But in the end, as Terry Ryan has told us many times, he was not going to overrule his scouting director on those picks. It's not, I don't think fans in baseball understand it just as it was. I mean, because if that were the case, if that were the case that what you're hiring Jason McLeod to do is make sure you don't screw up the number one overall pick, then we would have to give credit for all those players you mentioned to Theo Epstein.
Right.
But we don't. We don't. We're giving credit to the man who bears division of labor. And just as Darren Johnson was the one in the end who had to decide that Buxton was right at 2 or Cole Stewart was right at 4, et cetera. And for better or worse, it was his call, and Terry Ryan always gave credit where it was due. You don't Bigfoot your scouting director in baseball. So you set the process, you hire the right people, and then you let them do their job, make the recommendations, and you listen. As John Schuerholz used to say, you put everything in the hopper, and you make sure that it all comes out the way it should. And the hopper is the ability to synthesize opinions and get the room talking and run a meeting that's productive and not just a bunch of crusty baseball people yelling at each other. So Jason McLeod can do all that, but you have to be careful. The skill set you're talking about in the president of baseball operations is not the ability to draft well, because it's his job to hire the right guy to do that, if you understand.
So the people that I've spoken to have said, and you can, I want to know if what you're hearing jives with this, that the Twins are basically shooting for the moon with this hire. And without naming names or without going into any deep stuff that you're writing or working on here in the future, does that sound pretty accurate with what you've been hearing?
Boy, when you're the worst team in baseball and you're stuck in a 5 out of 6 year cycle of being horrible, you better shoot for the moon. The question that the Twins are going to have to come up big and surprise people is, will they pay market value for the president of baseball operations? It's a higher job than pure GM. And if you're talking about somebody who's then going to hire a general manager or decide which in-house Twins person should be that general manager and oversee every single aspect of baseball operations, that's a cut above. That's extra pay grade. So
we're talking like $5 million?
I mean, it's not. I don't know exactly how high up the scale you have to get to pay that person properly and not insult him. But Andrew Friedman's at $7 million
sure.
times 5 years. Theo Epstein purposely waited until the Cubs were about to end this curse or in full position to do so before he's working on an expiring contract that no one thinks he's going to leave. He's going to set the record for president of baseball ops salary very soon, whether it's after the World Series parade or after a disappointment in the postseason again, Cubs being the Cubs. He's going to take it at $10 million. The Twins are not going to pay this next person $5 million a year, even, I can't imagine. But will three do it? Would 2.5 times 4 years or 5 years do it? I don't know, but it's not going to be 2 million over times 3 years. I don't think that's going to get shoot the moon kind of talent. So there's an adjustment here where they're going to have to decide. I mean, they're going to have to pay a lot more, I'm thinking, for this person than they ever probably paid Kerry Ryan, who basically worked on a handshake deal. It's worthwhile, I think, because of the ripple effect and the credibility factor and everything that goes into that role. It's worthwhile to stretch out and match the market, or at least get higher up the scale in the market. But again, the top guy is Theo Epstein, and it's going to be $10 million a year for him. You have to think it's almost Phil Jackson kind of money. And then Friedman at seven, and then you fall in behind it. Hot commodities, I do have to think, are going to start wanting at least $3 million a year. If I were an agent representing these guys, I'd start to be insulted below $3 million a year for that role, which is amazing because forever, managers made more than the general managers.
I guess, and for me, it makes just too much sense when you're talking about the value between a second left-handed reliever and a fifth starter. You know, the person choosing those players should be compensated thusly. And so for me, it just kind of becomes a deal where, you know, outside of anything completely astronomical, I'm just getting it done. And is that about where you're at, or do you think that it's just a thing where they can't break precedent and open up the floodgates for, you know, the rest of the league to operate that way?
I don't know. You'd have to say, managerial salaries have skyrocketed over the years too. And the Twins have not kept pace with that, partly because I guess maybe Gardy never really forced their hand to do so. And then when Mulder came in, he was operating off what Gardy was making. So they're not at the top of the scale for managerial pay. They're in the bottom third probably. So they're going to have to, if they want to get a hot commodity or someone who's done it before even, it will cost. And, keep in mind, that person, the hotter the commodity, the more possibility it is that having a manager in place and then having a kind of an understanding or a preference, a apparent preference to retain as general manager Rob Antony, perhaps, that's all going to be fed into the machine that will spit out the next president of baseball operations, especially when you've never had that person. You've never had Kerry Ryan was all powerful over baseball operations, but there was never this two-tiered structure with the job responsibilities and the separations and the pay grade that is that comes along with it that we've seen over the last decade, where just about every team wants to do it that way. So those are factors. And again, keep an eye on San Diego. Preller gets pushed out, would somehow this be the right time for Jason McLeod to go back home? That's home. And in Arizona and wherever there may be surprise spots that pop open too. And he also might just decide to stay right where he is, because guess what? The Cubs pay very well. Mm-hmm. I think they pay very well, not just for Theo. There'll be money left over after they give Theo $50 million over 5 years.
Well, I'll be watching the situation with very interested ears and eyes. Mike, I want to say thank you for joining us. Also, thank you for putting up with some technical difficulties today. Thanks to the listeners as well. You've been listening to Midwest Swing by the Full Omaha Podcast Network.